following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
You know, I'm not a church person. You know, I'm not really that religious. I don't know how many times that I have heard those words from somebody that I'm trying to have some kind of spiritual conversation with. Usually those words are an excuse to change the subject. The person that is uttering those words is saying, you know, this is not really my thing. Let's talk about something else. Maybe that describes you today. But I also hear a similar sentiment coming from people who are church people. Usually the church people are pointing at the unchurched people, and they're saying, you know, those people are not like us. They don't really belong with us. Now, in that case, those words become an excuse for keeping our distance from those people. You know, it's kind of hard to carry out the Great Commission that Jesus has given his church if we're avoiding contact with the very people that Jesus has sent us out to reach. A lot of people in Jesus' day practice their own form of social distancing. Those who, like Jesus, had grown up in Jewish homes and practiced the Jewish religion tended to keep their distance from people who didn't come from that background or didn't practice the same religion that they did. Some of them even came to think that perhaps God didn't really care about those on the outside, but only for those who looked and lived like they did. Kind of think of it, are things really all that different among those who claim to be God's people today? In chapter 7 of his gospel, Mark challenges that assumption that God is only concerned with the right people. Already in chapter 7, we've seen Mark show us that Jesus dealt with this idea about what makes us clean or unclean before God. And contrary to many of his contemporaries, Jesus didn't believe that spiritual defilement was something that came to us from the outside. It wasn't some kind of contamination. It was a corruption that came from within. It didn't come from eating certain foods or from neglecting certain religious traditions. Instead, our uncleanness actually comes from within us. It's from our own bent and corrupted souls. And that's a problem that afflicts each and every one of us, no matter who you are or where you've come from or how you grew up. It's no use trying to look on the outside and judge whether this person is clean or unclean. The fact is, we are all unclean. We all suffer from the same spiritual contamination. And everyone has the same problem, whether you're from a religious background, whether you're a church person, or whether you're not. Now, in Mark chapter 7, verses 24 through 30, the passage we're going to look at this morning, we see that the cure is the same for all of us as well. First, this passage shows us that Jesus is trying to make a refreshing escape. In verse 24, Jesus got up and went away from there to the region of Tyre. And when he had entered a house, he wanted no one to know of it, yet he could not escape notice. So here's what's going on. Jesus attempted to retreat to a location where he could rest anonymously. According to Mark, Jesus left the region of Galilee, where most of his ministry took place, in an area that was predominantly Jewish, people like Jesus, and he traveled about 35 miles to the northwest to the region of Tyre, which is predominantly non-Jewish, at least in that day. Tyre was a major city in what is now Lebanon. The region around Tyre was settled primarily by people from either a Phoenician or a Greek background, not by Jews. Even though Tyre and Israel had historically had a lot of commercial ties, there was also a level of animosity between the people of that region and the Jews that lived in Galilee and Judea. Tyre was located on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, a very beautiful place. Maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but I like to think that maybe Jesus liked getting away on a beach vacation just as much as the rest of us. Now, ever since chapter 4, Mark has shown Jesus trying to get a break from ministry to get some rest. All these crowds have been coming to hear him preach. The press has been on him. People have been asking stuff from him. And, you know, it's a good reminder. Those of us in ministry do need to take a break from time to time to be recharged and refreshed. And In his human nature, Jesus was no different. So he's trying to get away, get a break. But every time Jesus had tried to do this, we've seen so far, his rest had been interrupted by people seeking help from him. So maybe Jesus went to Tyre, hoping nobody would recognize him. I mean, he says here he wanted no one to know of it. Maybe he's looking to finally get some rest. But when Jesus is present, he's hard to hide. Even in such a pagan environment as Tyre, some people recognize Jesus. Mark's already shown us that a delegation from Tyre had come to hear Jesus preach in Galilee. We saw that back in chapter 3, verse 8. Word soon spread that this miraculous preacher was in town. And so everybody began to seek him. People wanted to see this guy. And that's a good reminder to us today that if Jesus is truly present in our situation, he's going to draw attention. If you're a follower of Jesus, do the people around you see Jesus at work in you? Can our neighbors see Jesus at work in our church? If not, maybe we need to go back and consider, are we really following Jesus as closely as we think we are? As the saying goes, if Jesus is in your heart, it won't be long before he finds a way to be on your lips. Along with that, if Jesus is present and working in us, it won't be long before other people begin to notice. And if people aren't noticing that, maybe we need to take a step back and spend some time with Jesus trying to understand why that is. One of the people who noticed Jesus in Tyre came to him with a desperate entreaty. In verse 25, but after hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately came and fell at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of the Syrophoenician race, and she kept asking him to heal the demon or to cast the demon out of her daughter. So Jesus is approached by a mother with an urgent need. This woman's daughter was afflicted by what Mark calls an unclean spirit. Now, in the context of chapter 7, Mark's very intentional about that wording. A few verses later, he also identifies this unclean spirit as a demon. Now, we would say this little girl, in our words, was suffering from demonic possession. In other words, a malevolent spiritual entity from the outside was taking over her body and causing physical, emotional, and spiritual distress. That's something different from a simple case of mental illness. I mean, today our tendency is to look at descriptions like this and say, oh, that was just what they call mental illness. But remember that throughout this gospel, Mark has been very careful to distinguish between ordinary illnesses and these special type of spiritual afflictions. He uses an entirely different vocabulary whenever he's talking about these spiritual demonic possessions. People in Mark's day were a lot more aware of the spiritual dimension of life than those of us who've grown up in the so-called scientific age. They recognized that there were some things in this world that defy rational explanation. Is it possible that we in our culture tend to overlook some of those things because we've already convinced ourselves they don't exist? If you open your mind and your heart to God's existence, eventually you're going to become aware that there are other spiritual forces out there that are not as loving and benevolent as God is. Things that are dark and destructive. I used to live in a city that is known for its moral and spiritual darkness. It also happens to be a place where the occult is a very big part of the culture. And what was weird was many times as my wife and I were traveling across the bridge to get into that city, we could almost feel a sense of spiritual darkness descending. And the only way to describe it is almost like entering a spiritual fog bank. And what was wild is when we talked to other believers and found they had had a very similar experience coming in and out of that city. The incredible thing is that even in a place where such darkness was present, there were also reminders that ultimately God is still in control and his light still shines. The light shines in the darkness and the darkness cannot overcome it. But that spiritual darkness is real and it's out there. And it had found a foothold in the life of this little girl. It was from a similar place of darkness and a fear for her daughter's life that brought this woman to seek help from Jesus. Now, by conventional standards, this woman was the least likely candidate to receive assistance from a teacher like Jesus. Think about this. On the one hand, we have Jesus. He's a Jewish man born and raised in a Jewish homeland, steeped in Jewish culture, and styled as a Jewish religious teacher. And beyond that, he was suspected by many to be the fulfillment of the Jewish prophecies concerning the Messiah, the Savior that God had promised for centuries to send to the Jewish people. In contrast to Jesus, we have this woman who is in a society where women were often looked down upon, especially by many Jewish men of that time. We have, beyond that, a Gentile. In other words, she is a non-Jew. Now, what Mark actually says is that she was a Greek or a Hellenist. That's a reference not to her ethnic heritage, but to the culture she identified with, the Greek-influenced culture that had been introduced into that region by Alexander the Great a few hundred years before. She's also a Syrophoenician. Now, that is her ethnic heritage. Again, this stresses that she was a non-Jew, and therefore, in the eyes of many Jews at that time, she was an outsider. This woman was about as opposite from Jesus as any person could be. By human standards, she had no right to expect any help from a teacher like Jesus. All she had was her desperation and her belief that Jesus could make a difference in her situation. And notice how she came to Jesus. This woman, first of all, approached Jesus with humility. Mark tells us that she came to Jesus and she fell at his feet. Now, that's a sign of submission. It's a recognition of Jesus' higher status, that he is not ordinary. There is something extraordinary about this man. And in relation to him, we have no standing. She threw herself at his feet. How often do we throw ourselves at the feet of Jesus? She also came to him with respect. In verse 28, she addresses Jesus as Lord. The Greek word is kurios. In other words, she recognized that in this situation, Jesus was in charge, and she respected his authority. How many people come to Jesus expecting something from him, but not respecting his authority? And finally, she came to Jesus with persistence. The verb tense that Mark uses in verse 26 conveys that she made this request to Jesus repeatedly. She was continually pleading, and she was not prepared to take no for an answer. That persistence tells us something about her attitude towards Jesus. It actually plays a big part in how this story eventually plays out. Because when she first approaches Jesus with her plea, she's met by a reproachful exclusion. In verse 27, he was saying to her, "Let the children be satisfied first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Now, Jesus' initial response to this woman, to this desperate request, was a definite refusal. In response to her pleas, Jesus offers a kind of proverb. Now, the children in this proverb refer to Israel, otherwise known as the Jews. Okay, and according to the scripture, that's God's chosen people. In the minds of many Jews, these are the only people that God really cared about. And let me say right here that when I talk about the Jews in this passage, we're talking about a specific historical, theological context, okay? I know a lot of times when Jews today hear Christians talking about them, they start to get a little anxious. And in large part, that's because of some bad treatment on the hands of Christians, believers towards Jewish people over the centuries. And that's terribly unfortunate. But in this context, whenever I talk about the Jews, I'm talking about this particular group of people, this culture in the first century Middle East that Jesus was operating in. And we have to understand that mindset and that perspective in order to understand what Jesus is saying here. So the children refers to the Jewish people, God's chosen people, in their minds, the only people that God was really concerned about. The children's bread refers to the blessings of God's kingdom. The inclusion in God's redemptive plan. It refers to the privilege of living under God's rule and reign. In other words, salvation and acceptance by God. That was the bread. And the dogs refers to everybody else. It refers to the Gentiles. It refers to people like this woman. It's hard to see Jesus' response to this woman as anything but rude. First of all, Jesus didn't say this just once. Again, the verb tense Mark uses suggests he was saying this to her repeatedly. The more she's pleading, the more he's responding this way. There's also the insinuation made in Jesus' wording. Many of Jesus' Jewish contemporaries there in the first century often referred to non-Jews as dogs. Now, they weren't thinking about Fido and Fluffy here, okay? In the first century Middle East, dogs were scavengers. They often lived on the street. They ate other people's garbage. And in Jewish culture, most dogs were considered unclean. Contact with a dog would render a person unclean as well. That meant that you were contaminated. You couldn't hang out with other holy people. You couldn't go to worship at the temple. You couldn't offer the sacrifices until you'd gone through a cleansing purification ritual. So Jesus' words reflected a common insult that were directed at religious and racial outsiders. Now, that begs the question, why was Jesus being so rude and insensitive to this poor woman? Was Jesus guilty of the same petty prejudice as many of his contemporaries? Or is there something else at play here? See, sometimes God tells us no in order to test the sincerity and the seriousness of our faith. Maybe you've had the experience of coming to God for help. Lord, help me with this situation. Lord, rescue me from this problem. Lord, take away this sin or this temptation I'm wrestling with. And it seems, at least immediately, that the answer comes back, no. How do you handle that? Does that mean that God doesn't care? Does that mean that God's not able to help you? More than likely, God's delay means that he is testing to see if your faith, your trust in him, is genuine. Do you really trust him, or are you just trying to use him? When we truly trust in someone, we cling to them, even when it may appear that they're not responding to us right away. If we really trust them, we're going to hang on, and we're going to keep trusting that in the end, they're going to do the right thing. It's interesting to note something about Jesus' supposedly harsh rebuke here. First of all, notice what he actually says. He says the children should be satisfied first. In other words, he left open the possibility that the other people, the outsiders, would be satisfied later. Now, that goes along with some other things that Jesus says that show us how he perceived his earthly mission when he first came 2,000 years ago. According to Matthew's gospel, Jesus saw his earthly ministry aimed initially at what he called the lost sheep of Israel. It was after his death and resurrection that he instructed his disciples to take the gospel to the rest of the world. The Jewish people were the vessel through whom God brought forth his redemptive plan in Jesus. And now that this plan was manifested in the world, it's available for everyone, not just one group of people. The Apostle Paul refers to this in Romans 1, verse 16, where he says, I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, but also to the Greek. In other words, it came first through the Jewish people, as God had intended, and God set this up in history. But now that this redemptive solution has appeared in Jesus, it's available to everybody. Now, the word that Jesus uses for dogs here is also interesting, because it's not the usual word for street dogs, the kind of unclean, yucky, filthy scavengers that most Jews looked at as dogs. Literally, it's for little puppies. He's talking about house pets here. And as a non-Jew, as a Greek, this woman would have resonated with that. So Jesus actually, he uses the insult, but he softens the force of it. He talks about little house puppies here. As Jesus is refusing this woman, if you step back, you can almost see a gleam in Jesus' eye. There's something deeper going on here. And what's this woman going to do? How will she respond to this rebuff? Well, what we see is a determined expectation. In verse 28, she answered and said to him, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs under the table feed on the children's crumbs." So this desperate mother didn't let Jesus' initial refusal deter her from coming to seek his help. She hung on. If you'll pardon the expression, like a dog with a bone, she kept coming back to Jesus. Even the dogs get the crumbs that fall from the table. This mother's refusal to give up, is a demonstration of a determined faith in Jesus. And this mother understood that the blessing she needed rested more in God's grace than in her own worthiness. She indicates that she'd be satisfied with just a crumb. She doesn't want a place at the table, just a crumb. In other words, she recognized she was in no position to dictate terms to the Son of God. She was casting herself completely on God's mercy and was willing to accept whatever He gave her. How different from the way that so many of us try to approach God today. How many of us would have come to Jesus and demand not a crumb, but a seat at the head table, thinking that's our right? How many of us would think we deserve God's help because we're somehow good or worthy instead of seeing our actual poverty? Remember, Jesus said the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who were pure in spirit. That's in Matthew 5, verse 3, if you'd like to go read it for yourself. It's only when we understand our spiritual poverty, our need before God, our total dependence on God's mercy, that we are in a position to receive God's help. And if you haven't come to that place in your life yet, then you haven't really begun to get your heads around just how messed up our souls are, how every one of us has that inner corruption that builds a wall between us and God, and how it's only with His help that that wall can be torn down. Because this woman refused to give up, because she clung to Jesus in this desperate faith, she received a gracious endowment. In verse 29, He said to her, "Because of this answer, go. The demon has gone out of your daughter." So you can see, you know, Jesus starts out, it's not fit to give the children's bread to the dogs. But the more she pleads with Him and she demonstrates her faith in Him, I can just see the smile come across His face. And He says, "Go, you've got what you're looking for." In verse 30, we're told, "And going back to her home, she found the child lying on the bed, the demon having left." Her little girl was set free. Her little girl was made whole. And Jesus didn't even have to show up in the room and wave His hands or touch her or anything. He just gave the word. And it was so. Jesus clearly connected the granting of this woman's request to her demonstration of faith. Jesus demonstrated that He is a Savior for anyone who will come to Him in faith. It doesn't matter if you're a religious person, if you're a non-religious person, where you grew up, who you are, what you've done. The important thing is coming to Jesus in faith. Apart from Christ, we can't make a distinction between clean and unclean people. Think about this, okay? Apart from Christ, we are all unclean. With Christ, we realize that whatever worthiness we possess is not from us, it's derived from Him, ultimately. And if you think you're a clean person apart from Christ, basically you're a good person, then you really don't understand Christ at all. In fact, you may be very far away from Him. Before we can receive salvation and cleansing from Christ, we have to understand clearly why we need that cleansing, why we need salvation. And until you come to that point, it's going to be really hard for you to accept what Jesus is offering. Once we understand that, then we also understand that we are no better than anybody else. It changes how we look at the people around us. It's not a matter of clean versus unclean, church versus unchurched, good people versus bad people. We are all in the same boat, and we all need the same solution. Understanding that fact moves us to treat the people around us not as clean versus unclean, but as people who are all in this together. Now, even if you've never considered yourself religious, even if you see yourself as unclean and far from God, I got some good news for you today. Jesus came to save you too. All He asks is that you trust in Him and trust in what He's done for you. Jesus came to live the life of obedience that you and I owe to God, but always fail to accomplish. When Jesus died on that cross, He accepted the fate the rest of us deserve, death, because of our failure to offer God the obedience that He deserves. And when we honestly recognize our poverty, we recognize our need, and put our faith in Jesus and Him alone, and we start chasing after Him as if life depended on it, then He clothes us in His righteousness and makes us clean in God's sight. It doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter what you've done. Reach out to Him in faith today and invite Him to come into your life and to start changing you from the inside out. Cling to Him in faith and start pursuing Him every single day. If you're ready to begin that journey, we want to help. Let us know by leaving us a comment or reaching out to us through this email, info@newsalembaptist.net. We want to send you some encouragement and also connect you with some resources to help you as you chase after Jesus. God bless you until we come together again.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.